Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Money and Markets on the Solaria Report. John Titus is on the road and I'm back in the office. John, welcome.
Thank you, Catherine. Yes, I am on the road. I'm in a CIA safe house.
That's certainly what it looks like. I like the decor from Central Casting.
Yeah, okay. They gave me the one without AC, so I'm very warm.
So our theme this week is trench warfare. Was that it?
Yep, trench warfare. Trench warfare. What's going on?
It's really, you're watching the central controllers coming stronger and stronger, although they're trying to give relief in the summer to, you know, kind of build up their tsunami, and people are pushing back really hard. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are pushing back, but the next clampdown is coming for sure.
Yep. Yep.
The next wave. You know, we got a summer reprieve, so enjoy it while I'm. That's what I'm doing.
Did you ever see those movies of the of two guys in a car playing chicken in Texas?
No.
Oh, there were hundreds of those scenes in sort of B grade movies. I'm a B grade lover, and you get these vroom vroom vroom. You know, like two Gran Torinos and going at each other like this, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just dive in.
Okay, Let's start with Farmageddon. And this is a story. This is it's from Crypto World News.
You know who?
But it's not,
you know how we
really
found
a crypto
it?
Story.
Cynthia McKinney tweeted this out. That's how we found it.
Yeah, there's an interesting tidbit in here.
That's it. You got to read way down.
Yeah. So I was like, why are we looking at this story? You know, so this guy sells $75 million worth of shares. That's not the story at all. Okay.
Right.
It's down here. I make sure that you kind of get it in the center of the screen there. I've highlighted it in light blue. Global marketer A2 Milk's recovery ran out of puff. I think that's slang in Australia or wherever.
That's Kiwi. This is from New Zealand. So that's Kiwi.
New Zealand.
Right.
Yeah, Kiwi talk for steam, ran out of steam. So the A2 milk maker runs out of steam after falling 18 cents or 3% to $6, impacted by a competitor's comments in China. Feihe, China's largest infant formula maker, said sales would drop sharply in the next month. Sales would drop sharply in the next 1 to 2 years.
Right.
Since many women cannot bear children within 6 months of coronavirus vaccination, thus delaying births.
So what I'm being told now, and I'm hoping they will publish something in the next week or two from Doctors for COVID Ethics, is lipid toxicity. And we saw this in the FOIA they did of the Japanese, the Japanese health authority. The lipid toxicity, one of the places it goes is into the female sexual organs, and it looks like it may sterilize. That people who take these injections are going to have a short-term or long-term serious fertility problem. And you're talking about, you know, we may be looking at a real effort to bring infertility to really the global population. It's quite extraordinary. And the thing that is particularly extraordinary about it, John, is what the scientists are telling me is that they knew that it would do this. In other words, this could not be a coincidence. This could not be an accident.
Right.
They would have known before they unleashed these injections that it was going to cause significant infertility.
Just as they would have known that when you inject somebody in the deltoid, that the spike proteins don't stay there, they move around and they go to other places.
Right. So the Doctors for COVID Ethics is publishing a series of papers right now, and I would really tell everybody, you know, stay on their website, and it will include this. There's several big problems with the injections. One is the spike proteins causing, you know, they rip the vascular walls, they call blood clots, and that causes a whole series of anything from heart problems to neurological problems, depending on where the clots happen and where they land. And so whether it's the blood clots or the infertility, and as you know, I'm suspecting things linking you up to the financial system. So there are multiple problems with these injections. And the frightening thing about it is they do not, you know, they do not literally go in the body in the place where SARS-CoV-2 is supposed to go. Right. So this is a little bit like me, you know, you say you have the problem in the back yard, and I, you know, I put the seeds on the front yard. It makes no sense.
Yeah, right.
Like everything else. And
so, it doesn't make sense if you accept the official reason at face value.
Well, Mike Yaden, the former chief scientist at Pfizer, had intimated early on he was very worried about fertility problems coming from these injections. And it turned out he's, you know, more than right is what it's looking like.
Right. Yeah. And the deaths continue to climb. The last count on VAERS.
Right.
You now have six. It's in the U.S. It's north of 6,000, I think.
Well,
right at 6,000.
If you look at the problems, the effort to prevent nurses and doctors and people from reporting into VAERS is right. extraordinary. So it's hard for me to imagine what VAERS really means.
Well, okay, so previous vaccines have been yanked from the market for deaths. And you could look at previous vaccines and say, well, what threshold of deaths reported on VAERS, whether VAERS is totally comprehensive or not, what previous vaccines got pulled for deaths? And you could see that the previous vaccines that got yanked for too many deaths, the threshold was
much lower.
25, 50. Now you've got 6,000. And, you know, it can't be the vaccine. It's never the vaccine.
Well, you know, it was really interesting. Last week I was with the Children Health Defense Team in Switzerland. And Mary Holland, who's the vice chairman and runs the operation for Bobby, was there, and Senta Dupuy, who runs the European chapter, and Dr. Meryl Nass, who's done, you know, extraordinary work on the whole vaccine program over the last 20 plus years. Anyway, they really believed that the heart problems coming up in young people was going to have a significant effect on the sort of tsunami that is coming, whether it's full FDA authorization for Pfizer or, you know, get things pulled, didn't bump it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's full steam ahead. We don't care how many kids we kill.
Right. It's because it's never the vaccine.
Right.
It's not the vaccine, you know. Okay, good to segue, though, with Pfizer, because our next story is Pfizer. Pfizer sees robust COVID-19 vaccine demand for years, $26 billion in 2021 sales. So you say, well, you know, how big is, you know, what are we talking about there in terms of increase, you know? And so you look at this story, Pfizer raised its forecast for 2021 COVID-19 vaccine sales by more than 70% to $26 billion. And they say they cite demand from governments around the world fighting to halt the pandemic could contribute to its growth for years to come. So that's an astonishing headline. I mean, 70%.
So, you know, I said I wanted to show the stock chart when we got to going direct, but I'd love to show it now. Can you pull it up?
The stock chart?
Yeah.
I believe I can. Let me go. Yep. Let me go to here.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So there are four lines here. We have at the bottom, after, you know, and remember we did this last night after the close of the market. So after that headline was published, the bottom one is Pfizer, which you can see is underperforming the global stock market. The second line, which is up almost 14% for the year, is the Vanguard total market globally. And so despite all these sales, Pfizer is underperforming the S&P and underperforming the global stock market. The S&P is outperforming the global stock market by a tad.
You know, wow.
So I'm telling you, it's a kickback machine. You know, they may be making a lot of sales, but I think the kickbacks are flowing out of the door. Now here's the message of this chart. The next line up is the S&P banks.
Right.
Which are outperforming the world stock market and outperforming the S&P by a significant amount.
Right.
And then on top of that is Lloyd's of London.
What's going on there?
Well, what's going on is the going direct reset, and whatever the injections are, they are engineering where it is the banks want to go. That's what this chart says to me. When Justin made it last night, I just started laughing. I said, you know, I love money. It's the greatest mapping tool in the world.
Right.
Right.
So let's just look at the bottom right of that chart to focus on Pfizer just for a second. You know, it's flat. Pfizer is flat from the 14th to the 29th, which is the date we got this chart. From the June 14th to June 29th, Pfizer is flat.
Right.
Okay. Now I want to switch back to the story on Pfizer that we just looked at and look at the date of the story. This is May 5th.
Right.
Okay. So let's just cut back. I wasn't sure about that. So now that I know that the date of the story where they say, hey, you know, our sales are going to be, we're increasing our forecast by 70%.
Right.
Let's cut back to that graph and look back to, you know, the beginning of May. And let me just get over there so I can see it. Okay. Beginning of May. It's flat. It's right. Totally flat.
Right. I'm telling you.
It's actually down.
Pfizer
a
is
bit.
A utility, and I think they're running a kickback machine, you know, buying everybody into the system, and that's my guess. And wherever that money's going, is the shareholders don't anticipate it's coming to them. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, on May 1st, May 5th, right in there, Pfizer is up 10% on the year, and then it just trucks right along. Now it's up 8.43%. So,
but remember, May, it was significantly underperforming the S&P.
Right.
Right.
Right, you see that. Right. I mean, just to cut back to that, you can see, it's way below. The S&P at that time is about 32.5%. No, I'm sorry. It's matched. It's matching the S&P at the beginning of May.
Right.
Right?
Well, that's the world stock market there. But yes, it's tracking.
It's so tracking.
All I'm saying, I see much more correlation between the bank stocks and the levels of vaccination than with Pfizer. Now, what they're talking about in there, of course, is their goal to get full authorization and be able to vaccinate down to very young ages. So more on that in a second.
Right. More on that in a second. Okay, that's next story in Farmageddon. Let's just cut to this. This is an interesting one. This is WHO sort of reversing itself. They come out and they say, and the defender catches them, children should not be vaccinated for the moment. So they're backing off a little bit, these problems with children's hearts, and they recognize, hey, you know, the COVID itself isn't that bad for kids. But then the defender writes an article about it and says, hey, you know, even the WHO admits we shouldn't vaccinate kids. And they note here in the editor's note, after this article was published on The Defender June 22nd, the WHO edited its latest guidance on who should get the COVID vaccine by removing the sentence, children should not be vaccinated for the moment, and instead saying, a panel of experts has found the vaccine suitable for use by children over the age of 12. So that's a stark reversal.
Right, and what this means is we don't care how many children get myocarditis from these vaccinations or neurological damage. We don't care how many kids we kill.
Right.
We're just going to plow forward for full authorization. I don't know if you saw it, but we have published a parental consent form that Jerry Day wrote it. And then we had a couple of attorneys review it. And essentially it's designed for a parent. It's based in U.S. and everybody feel free to adapt it to their countries or translate it and republish wherever you want. But it's basically for a parent to walk into a school and enforce against them to make sure that they don't vaccinate behind their back. Because we see Philadelphia, San Francisco, other cities trying to say they can accept a consent down to 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah, that's insane.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the push is on.
Yep.
So that's a perfect example right there, trench warfare. they're moving ahead. Right. They're just digging through that trench. I mean, that's, forget it. They're not going to stop.
Right.
You know, even when they gain reason for a minute. Anyway, let's switch over to the next story. This is really a video, we're not going to watch the video, but there's a caption below the video about this This is from CBS News, using mRNA tech beyond COVID vaccines. And really, it's the expectations here that I guess is the sort of the headline. By using mRNA as a platform for delivering vaccinations, biotech companies like Moderna have been able to rewrite COVID vaccines swiftly to address newly emergent variant strains. Okay. And now fighting COVID is just the beginning, as Moderna plans to use mRNA to change the way we treat or prevent other diseases. And so there's a whole story on this. I find that noteworthy because, you know, Moderna, it never had a product before all this started.
Right.
And now the companies, you know, you can see from the bluster in that yellow caption there, they're like, yeah, we're taking over the world. You know, this is for years to come. This is going to feed us for decades.
It's like, so one of the things they're talking about is in this video is integrating their boosters with the annual flu shot. And the interesting, you know, the spin in the thing is basically, oh, this is just like the annual flu shot. Just get one. I think they're talking about two a year. And it's so easy and light, no problem. And it's just like the annual flu shot. And now we've made it very easy, simple. And it's, you know, it's like having dinner or something.
Right.
And what they're talking about is putting you on a treadmill of constant injections.
Right.
And doing it in a way that they make it sound like it's very, you know, it's like having a drink of water. What they don't mention is the dangers of this. And it's extraordinary,
right?
Because one of my dearest friends in the world was killed essentially because she had an annual flu shot where they'd integrated the swine flu vaccination. And
wow.
And it wiped out her immune system and she was dead in 3 months. And I I was there the whole way, taking her from independent living to the nursing home, to the hospital, I went the whole way with her. And I watched it all happen. I couldn't talk her out of taking the flu shot. But her attitude is, oh, the annual flu shot. I get the flu shot every year. And I kept saying they've integrated this in with it. But she couldn't compute that. It's just like, I've had the annual flu shot my whole life. What's wrong?
Yeah. So the marketing is something. The marketing is very important. Like you mentioned, it's like taking a drink of water. So there's the marketing, from my point of view, really, it's two things. There's two broad beachheads to the marketing. One is overstate the menace of COVID.
Right.
And two, understate or explain away
the
dangers of the vaccine, the dangers of the injection. And you see this going on all the time. And what's notable about this is that you see the media's help enlisted in this constantly. We're going to see a story in a minute about that. But for now, we're going to go to the first part, which is the overstating of the COVID menace. And there's this case in, where was it, Brussels? No, Lisbon.
Ah, yeah. This is unbelievable.
Yeah. So Lisbon court rules that less than 1% of, quote, verified cases died of COVID. So the number of COVID deaths is actually 152, not 17,000 as claimed. And that is from a court ruling on this.
I'll tell you, I don't know who this judge is, but I love him.
Yeah. All those responsible for handling data from cases and deaths can thereafter only be tried for the crime if there is only any dignity remaining in the rule of law.
Right.
If these figures are of the same order of magnitude for other countries as well, and there is no reason to assume otherwise, then the plague is a deception of unprecedented proportions, and crimes committed against humanity on a huge scale have been committed here.
Yep.
So, you know, no ambiguity from the judge there, right? I mean, you know, I think that's what we suspected. I didn't even suspect that it's less than 1%.
It's very interesting. Yesterday, there was the judge who had ruled in the mass case in Germany was raided. But yesterday, the mother of the kids, the several expert witnesses, a whole series of people associated with that case were raided by the German enforcement agencies. I don't know the specifics, but it was a huge raid, grabbing their files, grabbing everything.
Right.
And it wouldn't surprise me if the way it was done, which was for the people involved quite shocking, was to try and send messages to judges like that. You know, if you mess with us, you know, we're going to come down on you hard.
Right. And the person who sent the message along said, you know, I'm here in Germany. Welcome to the new Stasi.
Right.
Now, I'm very, very blunt.
Right.
About what was going on. Okay. The next story is what I was talking about in terms of it's never the vaccine. So this is... So the stuff they expect you to believe is just—it's incredible. It's ludicrous. So the headline—you see it right here. Why most people who now die with COVID in England have been vaccinated?
Well,
that's kind of surprising.
It's very funny, right? Because the—you know—it's a clever trick because essentially the Delta variant appears to be vaccine injury, and so you're using vaccine injury to market. You know, people don't want to take the vaccines because they've had friends or family who've been injured.
Yeah.
So they're resisting, but you're using the vaccine injuries as the ploy to help market the vaccines.
Right. And part of the marketing is public officials saying, you know, this Delta variant, it's a very wily enemy, and it seems to know how to counterattack us.
Right.
When we go after it, it evades us. And there was one commenter who's like, well, you know, who is this variant? Is it Napoleon?
Right.
You know? Anyway, to go back to this.
Have you heard of a test that can identify the Delta variant?
No.
Right.
How? In other words, you're taking your rickety PCR test, which
doesn't work anyway.
And somehow it's able to distinguish between regular COVID and the Delta variant? Okay. Anyway, so let's just look at here are the numbers. June 13th headline, study show 29% of 42 people who have died after catching the new strain had both vaccinations. Okay, so that's June 13th.
Wow.
Flash forward a couple weeks to June 25th, that figure had risen to 43%, 50 of 117. So out of 117 people dead from the so-called Delta variant, 50 of them had both vaccinations.
Two weeks to flatten the curve.
Yeah. So the article's like, you know, it could sound worrying that the majority of people dying in England with the now dominant Delta variant have been vaccinated. Does this mean the vaccines are ineffective? Far from it. It's like, well, that's not really the question, is it? The question is, why is your vaccine killing
people?
Why are people dying?
Right.
Not whether it's effective. It's effective at killing them.
Right.
Yeah. You just said that. And then, so they go on and they answer. The whole article just goes on answering. Like, it's effective. Don't worry about its effectiveness. It's like, I'm not worried about its effect. I'm worried about dying, okay? But that's the kind of nonsense you get from these stories. You know, they're just like, yeah, totally normal for vaccines to kill people. Don't even worry your pretty little head. Everything's okay. Well, the next is a paper. This is the last in our Farmageddon wrap up. Let me see. This is, so you can see the headline there. SARS-CoV-2 elicits robust adaptive immune responses regardless of disease severity. And basically what this is a scientific journal. I had to put it in reader view because it was completely unmanageable in the regular internet view. But basically this story, this paper comes out and says what we've known all along, which is that
we already have herd immunity.
Yeah, here it's under findings. I'm just going to highlight it on the fly. We report broad serological profiles within the cohort detecting antibody binding to other human coronaviruses. 202, which is over 99%, because there's only 203, if you look up here, it's only 203 in the study. So 202 participants, 99%, had SARS-CoV-2 antibodies because they'd already had a disease.
Right.
So it's like, well, what? So why are you insisting on vaccinating these people? They're immune. They have the antibody. You can't help them.
I'm finding many, many more people realizing the whole thing's absurd. You know,
really?
Yeah, because they understand, you know, they understand we have herd immunity, and they understand that if for some reason you get this, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine work. So
right, I think, and I've picked up on this aroma or tenor from people.
Right.
It's the media. They made a big mistake by not backing off the COVID, terror story. But then they've become the boy who cried wolf. You know, it's like cases are going down, hospitalizations are going down, deaths are going down, and you guys are still, you know, you've got the amp up at 11 still.
Right.
And you're blaring and there's no bodies in the street.
Well, I hope that's the case, because we just saw Tucker Carlson do a trial balloon on climate change lockdowns.
Yeah.
And it's like they're looking for a new.
Yeah. They're looking for a new bogeyman.
Right.
They're looking for a new bogeyman to justify the lockdowns and whatnot, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's what I think too. Okay. Ready to go to diluting the brand?
Now where did we have Matt Hancock? Did we have him here or under Farmageddon or
we've got him under diluting the brand.
Oh.
Going
direct.
Sorry, Matt Hancock.
He's under going direct.
Okay. Is that right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I know he's in here. Don't worry about that.
I'll bring it up one way or the other.
Okay. So anyway, let's switch gears to diluting the brand. And this is pretty big dilution here for a story from Fox. This is crazy. Biden's off-limits list for Russian cyber attacks criticizes green light to target everything else. This one's not very hard to understand. I mean, Biden just basically supposedly handed Russia a list of stuff like this is off limits. And like, well, what does that mean? You know, don't attack these things. So people are like, well, what are you telling them? You give them a green light to target everything else?
Well, but here's the thing. If you're assuming that the Russians are cyber attacking us, why would you give them a list of the things you don't want them to attack?
Right.
Now, here's what's interesting. For the president to give a list to Putin at a summit like that, that list has to be cleared by the CIA, the National Security Council, the Department of Justice, and State Department.
Right.
So why would all those agencies clear giving Putin a list of the things they don't want him to attack? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I just want to read it doesn't. It's the whole thing's crazy. So this is the quote. This is a quote from Biden. I just want to read it. I talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructure should be off limits to attack, period, by cyber or any other means. I gave them a list, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have it in front of me. 16 specific entities, 16 defined as critical infrastructure under U.S. policy, from the energy sector to our water systems. It's like, what are you doing?
Well,
you know, don't attack these.
The only reason that you would publicize something like this, let alone do it, is if you're basically trying to destroy the United States.
Right. And you know,
that's what we're seeing.
That's what it's looking like more and more.
Right. So globalize the military because we're incompetent to manage it. Globalize the taxation because, you know, you needed to support your global military. Globalize the bureaucracy because we're seeing very odd things happening in civil service in Washington. And that's what it looks like. You're basically taking the dollar reserve currency and shifting it out of U.S. hands, and you're trying to do everything you can to weaken the U.S. so they'll let go.
Well, yeah, you're making you're removing the sovereignty of all countries.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure the way they're going to do that is they're going to make them all subject currencies.
Right.
Yeah, every currency is going to be an inferior currency to a global currency that's run by the globalists from the BIS or the IMF or whatever.
Right.
And a friend of mine pointed out, he says, if you're going to beat up a group of people, you know, you got a group of people you want to take out, you take the biggest one and you take him down first.
Right.
And that's what that looks like. Right. The U.S. looks idiotic.
Right. Well, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make us look like Keystone Cops.
Yeah. Right. They're doing a fine job. Next story. Now, this is not really an updated story, but I think there's one coming from Matt Hale on Solari. Right.
Yeah, I think we published it yesterday. Matt,
okay.
If you go to the homepage, you'll see the new, or I guess do you have the homepage up or?
Let's see. Let me see if I can do this on the fly. Where am I looking?
If you go down.
Yeah.
See, on the top page, you'll see all the forms we've developed for employees and parents for dealing with the COVID. Keep going down.
Okay.
And it's just down here. Oh, see, in commentaries, the United States District Court of Zambia take over the courtroom.
There we go.
And so, yeah, okay. Matt Hale has followed this up with, you know, more on the dangers of allowing juries to be done by Zoom. Very bad idea.
Right. And so I had a previous story up. So this is a follow-up from Hale. And you and I actually covered that story that I initially had up before.
Right.
The issue of Zoom trials is not fading as the pandemic seems to be. In fact, it is causing a debate in the legal community as to whether or not to continue conducting Zoom jury trials and court hearings. A rare public debate has broken out between judges in the United States District Court for the Western District of Washington. It's rare that judges air their differences in public square. That's exactly right. He is totally correct. Federal District Court judges never do that. The debate centers around continuing Zoom trials and proceedings in federal courts. It exposes the level to which big tech is making its way into our justice system. So they say the United States District Court for the Western District of Washington, that's like Spokane, isn't it?
Yes. This one change could destroy the U.S. judicial system.
How do you say that?
Because have you ever served on a jury?
No, actually never. I get bounced.
So I think, you know, juries are far from perfect, but I've served on a jury, and I have to tell you, there is no better defender of the law and freedom than 12 independent lay people.
Right.
And a lot of the corruption, I don't know if you know this, I was denied a jury trial, and it was very interesting to see how they do it, because it's a right, it's a constitutional right. And
on what grounds?
On the grounds that they couldn't rig it if they had a jury. Well, so they needed to rig it.
Okay. What were the stated grounds?
The stated grounds was that our filing was 2 days late. They had, you know, they did a funny thing on how they counted when we had to file. And, you know, so it was a civil procedure game.
Yeah. So it's a waiver.
Filing. Yeah.
They
anyways,
said we waived.
So, you know, if you look at what it takes to rig, I've watched judges be rigged. I know a lot about the rigging of judges and the rigging of lawsuits. So if Dick Cheney's going to rig a legal decision, that's a lot harder if he also has to rig the jury.
Yeah.
It's much more expensive. It's much harder. And the other thing is judges, you know, even great judges are, in a sense, you know, prisoners of the legal system, whereas a jury can just decide, you know something, you know, we're just going to do it.
Right.
They can, in a funny kind of way, they are free to be more grounded than a judge who doesn't want to get overturned at a higher court.
That's exactly right. Because a jury, you know, okay, first of all, in a criminal case, you know, a jury exonerates somebody. That's it. Prosecution can't appeal.
Right.
Right. So if the jury doesn't like the law, they can nullify it.
Right.
So that's the first thing they hate about juries. The other thing is that the standard of review on a jury is very differential, because you don't have, you know, with a judge, you have a microscope into the reasoning. A jury, you don't have that. You have a verdict form where they say yes or no a few times, and you have to reverse the jury. You have to say, well, there's no reasonable way they could have ticked no three times and yes two. You know, you have to really, it's got to be really compelling, and it's not. It's very easy on appeal to defend a jury. It's hard to overturn.
It was amazing to me when I was on a jury how seriously, you know, we had people from all different walks of life and backgrounds. It was in New York City. And it was amazing how seriously they took it and what a great job they did. It was a very impactful experience. And I, you know, it was one of many experiences where I've had where, you know, I really have a lot of faith that people who are in a process where they have the time and take responsibility can be very, very wise together.
Yeah. And I've seen that firsthand with juries. They want to get it right.
Right.
And not only that, I've done focus studies with juries.
Uh-huh.
Where you pay people, you put a Craigslist ad out, you get people, and you put them on a jury.
Oh, is this how you do your testing before you go to trial?
You're damn right it is. Yeah. You have 10 different juries, you know, you pay them.
Right.
And you see the themes. And they, you know, even on the test juries, they take it seriously.
Right.
You know, you get a group of people there and it's the law. It's like, you know, just say the law three times. And they want to get it right.
Right.
So, man, yeah, anyway. That I don't like seeing it messed with on Zoom either. Why judges are still continuing, you know, with Zoom, I don't know. I could see why a debate would break out. Well, among judges. Anyway, next up in the dilution of the brand, you see this Pentagon? So the report is now out, Catherine. After all these years, we have waited for the U.S. to admit that they're UFOs. So the Pentagon comes out with a report. Here it is. And I'm just going to highlight this on the fly. The document is a brief 9-page version of a larger classified report provided to Congress. So the story continues.
Talk about diluting the brand. You pay us $1 trillion a year, and we don't control our airspace, and we don't know who does.
Right, right. And you get more fuel, you get more fodder for the story, because it's only 9 pages and it's part of a bigger report.
Well, John, and don't you know we need a global military to deal with this because it's a global phenomenon?
Of course we do.
and more Trojans. We need more Trojans.
The spaceships, they don't respect sovereign country boundaries.
That's right.
Are you kidding me?
There you go.
That's crazy. I don't think there's any more in dilution of the brand.
That's enough. You know, I'm getting criticisms from subscribers because I laugh so much about these things.
Yeah.
What Mel Brooks used to say in The 2,000-Year-Old Man, he says, we laugh so as not to cry. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
If you love the United States of America, this is really heartbreaking.
This is, it's a really tough time.
Right. Right.
It's a tough time to be alive. And it's tough. It's hard to cope day to day for me personally without anger. Just.
Well, you know what we say on the Solari team? We say that we have to maintain our state of amusement.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's more important to be effective than it is to, you know, be a drama queen. So I try and keep a state of amusement, but it is heartbreaking.
Right. And ultimately, you know, comedy is subversive at its root.
Yeah, absolutely. My experience is the thing that best triggers the Midianite thing, them fighting among themselves, is transparency, but laughing at them. So that's why we do it. I don't know if you know, we do a new cartoon every week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I think it's easier to get people to join you if you can do it from a spirit of amusement.
Right.
Like, isn't that funny? And then they begin to... Laughing at something puts distance between the person and the thing at which they're laughing.
I don't know. I took 2 years of spiritual warfare at a great church in Washington, and that's what gave me permission to laugh.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, on to FedWatch. You ready?
Oh, speaking of laughter, let's go.
Here we go. All right. Uh-huh. You got that? Financial blacklisting. Wells Fargo shuts down GOP Senate candidate Lauren Witzke's bank account. This is a good one. So they just shut down her account. They don't like what she's saying. And Wells Fargo, it says, okay, so they reach out to Wells Fargo to say, hey, why are you shutting down an account? Wells Fargo says, we do not consider political views or affiliations in making account decision, said a spokesman. And then on the heels of that, we find another person, Pete Dabroska, a conservative activist and contributor to American Greatness, reported that his Wells Fargo savings account had been shut down on the same day as Witzke's.
Right.
So despite the fact that it's not political, it's all for conservative people. And he says, well, the guy who he had his account closed, Wells Fargo closed down my account without notice and can't cut me a check for the balance because the balance is in the mail. So there, you know, when I saw this, I thought, well, where it's easy for a bank, you know, a bank would be motivated to delete its own liabilities, which is what a checking account is, but doesn't that leave its balance sheet out of whack? And that's not the case. They're mailing a check to someone else. So
it used to remind me when I was a partner, Dylan Reed, the number one source of income on Wall Street at the time was float, you know, because rates were still, you still had quite an arbitrage. And Merrill Lynch used to, you know, people, if people closed out their account, they'd mail him a check on the Bank of Hawaii, and it would take forever to get there, and then it would take 10 days to clear. Get him back. Right.
Boy, that was a long time ago. A float was a dominant source of income.
I know.
But then again, interest rates were real back then.
Right.
You know. Okay. This next story, this is an opinion piece.
Oh, I wanted to mention, I talked to an activist from Germany last week. He had 5 bank accounts closed on him.
Wow.
So clearly targeted. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely targeted. Next story from Bloomberg. This is a little disturbing. America should become a nation of renters. The very features that made houses affordable and stable investment are coming to an end. This story is actually just completely ridiculous. They're trying to sell you like, hey, it's normal the vaccines kill people. This is like, it's good that you're going to rent your house and rent your clothes.
Right.
You'd be happy about that. So they're saying the housing market that is desperately short on supply and seeing month over month price increases greater than they were in the frenzied market of 2006. So the housing market, because of QE, quantitative easing, is ablaze.
And I just got a report that the prices, the average price on housing last month was up 14%.
It's crazy.
Right.
And we'll get to a story why. But they're trying to tell you, well, it's good that house prices are going up because it's liquidity. Most America's single biggest asset, their home, is becoming more liquid. Call it the liquefaction of U.S. housing market. And they said
now hyperinflation is called liquefaction. I love it.
So here they warn you though, the more liquid an asset, the higher that premium goes. In other words, the you get a bigger premium, the more liquid your asset is. So your house is worth more. On the flip side, those same high-flying stocks and bonds, which are really liquid, see their prices collapse when the investors get spooked and withdraw their cash from the market. Right. So the whole thing goes on. It's just a trial balloon, this whole thing. It goes on. It never explains.
Well, you've got an intentional effort to shift people from homeowners into renters and turn a lot of the housing stock into, you know, the basis of REIT kinds of investment vehicles. So and that's a systemic move. It's been going on for a long time. It's a plan. It's clearly engineered. And this is just marketing it.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like using the media to market this change that we're undertaking right now.
Right.
And the reason it's occurring, and I've explained this in a couple of videos, including most recently, I think quantitative easing is the greatest sham ever,
right.
Is that when the Fed creates a dollar of reserves, the way it's doing it now in the 2020-2021 variation, is that dollar reserves is being used to purchase an asset from a non-bank, and that forces the creation of a dollar in bank money.
Right.
And so you have $4.5 trillion floating around looking for yield. And so on that note, let's go to our next story.
And I just have to mention, coming from the printer this week, is going direct hard copy. So the print, if you're a print digital subscription, you get it. If not, we'll have it up in the store in a week or two. And it is, if you want to understand this and what John's talking about, what's happening, this is the, I don't know, this is the best single source I know to explain the going direct reset, which is the reset we're dealing with. So
yeah, I lay it out there. Like how,
and the website and the PDF is up. So if you haven't read it, you can get it today. Just go get the PDF.
It takes a little bit of doing, and it takes a little bit of unlearning what you think you know about money, because the system is so rigged in this the monetary system. It's not taught anywhere at any level of education. And so you have to kind of unlearn what you learn. So I kind of try to lay it out in that going direct reset, which I'm glad is coming out in physical form. That's great.
Well, the thing I love about it is what we need is for millions of people to understand enough about the money game to understand we don't need central banks. So the central banks are taking over, but the reality is we don't need them. You know, whatever they do, the sovereign governments or we can do for ourselves, we don't need them. And so the time has come to really, you know, deal with something that's been a bad problem since 1913.
It's been a bad problem for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Bloomberg story, if we're going to be a nation of renters, they never explain, you know, why these huge increases. The next article sort of gets at it, and this is an article from Zero Hedge. America's largest landlord just got bigger. Blackstone buys 17,000 houses for $6 billion. That's not exactly right, but right. It's close enough. Blackstone, I have it highlighted, has agreed to buy a single-family rental company, Home Partners, for $6 billion. And it's a company they're buying that owns the houses. Home Partners owns more than 17,000 houses in the U.S. The company buys, rents out, and eventually offers its tenants a chance to buy these houses. Now all those functions will be done by the largest U.S. private equity firm. And so it's like, well, why does Blackstone have all this cash? And it's because of QE.
Right, exactly.
I mean, we're
back to they print money, give it to their pals, their pals buy assets cheap, at the moment that we have to sell because we've shut down, our economy has been shut down, our jobs have been shut down, everything's been shut down. And here's the sad part, we can print money too, if we would just organize and do it.
Right. The Congress could do it. The people did it during the Great Depression.
Absolutely.
But the point here is that, people are like, well, Blackstone's not buying those houses, but they really are. And what nobody's pointing out is that, Blackstone, to get that money, there's a couple things here. They sell bonds. They sell typically treasuries to get the money to buy these houses. So they replace a low-yielding asset with what they perceive as a high-yielding asset, in this case, houses. Or groups of houses. But the other big thing is that, QE added something like $4 or $4.5 trillion of reserves, which, more than doubled reserves. And it also added significantly to M2. Bank lending is pretty flat, so M2 has been flat. All other things being equal, it would have been flat. But for QE, and when you put $4 trillion into whatever it was, $14 trillion M2, that's a lot of money. And that hot money, whatever asset Blackstone and these guys are going to buy with all that hot money, this new bank
money, it's going to drive up prices.
That's going to drive up the prices. Of course it is. And they're driving, and that's what people were trying to defend the Feds. Like, oh, no, they're not really buying houses. They're buying companies that own houses.
And I don't understand, John, because the White House apparently just, pushed off the end of the eviction moratorium by another month. And the Supreme Court, I haven't read the case. I don't know if you have, but apparently they wouldn't mess with it. And what in the world is happening to the landlords who are just sitting there not getting rent?
I think it's more of the same. I mean, it's look who's getting crushed. It's middle American landlords, and look who's benefiting. It's right. Blackstone.
Right.
It's not hard to figure out what's going on here.
Right.
Housing market is heavily slanted toward the mega financiers.
We're just about to publish Mark Skidmore's update on the missing money. So as of 2015, there was $21 trillion missing. There's been reports of another amount of adjustments that would bring it up to $96 trillion, but we can't confirm that they're undocumented versus documented or undocumented. And so we're not adding, we're not changing the figure. We're footnoting the figure.
Right.
And then Mark has written a long, detailed explanation. And he has tried and tried and tried to get the documents and can't get them. They won't publish them. So, since FASB 56. But this gets to an out of control world, which is a military saying, something, you give us $1 trillion legally and we don't know what's going on in your airspace and we don't control the airspace. And we have trillions of dollars also missing through us. So it's kind of like they're the black hole in the universe.
Right.
Right. So the money's out of control. The airspace is out of control. We certainly know technology is out of control, particularly the technology being injected into our arms.
Yeah. Oh,
so, the overt message is quite incoherent.
Yeah. Well, this one's okay. So let's just cut over to the story. You brought it up, the moratorium. So this is a quickie. The moratorium will now remain in effect to July 31st. So it's a 1 month extension of the moratorium. But it just keeps going on and on and on. And place your bets on whether that moratorium actually gets lifted on July 31st.
I don't know. Marie McDonald told me the other day that there's 7 million properties in the foreclosure pipeline that have been held up by the moratorium on foreclosures.
Right. And remember, the moratorium, it's just, you know, when the moratorium gets lifted, it's not just that you got to start making your payments again. You're on the hook for the previous payments too.
Right.
Whether you're an owner or a renter.
Right.
You're on the hook for all those back payments. I mean, what's going to happen? Do you really think Biden is going to say, oh yeah, we're just going to kick, you know, 7 million people out in the street and give them a huge bill, tell them to go declare bankruptcy? I have a hard time seeing that. In other words, the people getting crushed here are the Blackstone and BlackRock. They're completely fine with the moratorium.
Well, here's the thing. Are they building a constituency for the universal basic income?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what it looks like to me.
Absolutely. That's what they're doing.
You put people out of work. You put their businesses out of business.
Yep.
And then you string them along like this. And then at some point they have to, you know, they have to get shuffled into the corral.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, next FedWatch story. And this is another one that, you know, you can read and go indirect. You know, we knew about this a long time ago. Top U.S. officials consulted. This is a journal story, I think.
Right.
New York Times. Top U.S. officials consulted with BlackRock as markets melted down. And they go into some granular detail. This is nothing that Solari subscribers wouldn't read in the going direct reset. But now, here's an example of the timeline we're talking about. Mr. Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary under Trump, held 60 recorded calls over the frantic Saturday and Sunday leading up to the Fed's unveiling on Monday, March 23rd, of a policy package that included its first ever program to buy corporate bonds. The corporate bond purchases was really a drop in the ocean. The real action was in Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities.
So I love it. The Secretary of the Treasury is talking more to Larry Fink at BlackRock than he is to the president.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. There and somebody even says, I think it's in this article. So look at this. This is from a Chicago Kent law professor. BlackRock, they're about as close to a government arm as you can be without being the Federal Reserve.
Right.
Well, I think the Fed's... Yeah, okay.
So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the pushback is on this, because Fink has not been careful. Usually players who play the kind of role Fink has played are, you know, they're pretty careful and they're pretty understated. And he has not been that way at all. He's been remarkably brazen.
Yes.
And a wonderful Dutch researcher just put together a video, I think I sent it to you, where she goes through all the different companies involved in the going direct reset and points out, you know, 5% is owned by BlackRock and 5% is owned by Vanguard. And she makes the connection to owning and basically holding the proxy on a huge number of companies involved in this.
Yeah.
And shows the extent of the central control. And really does a remarkably professional job of outing BlackRock. And that video has put BlackRock on the tip of the tongue for people who normally would never even hear of the firm.
Right. In other words, BlackRock is a new Goldman Sachs. It's a new vampire squid.
Worse. It's worse.
Yeah.
Because, Goldman Sachs, for all of its horrible financial fraud, you know, but it was not associated with a global program to make women infertile.
Right. And nor was it was called Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Whereas BlackRock is, you know, they own the media, they own the pharmaceutical companies, they own the tech companies, they own everything.
Right. So,
and now you see them in bed with the Fed and with the Treasury Secretary and the government.
But Larry Fink is on record every year with his annual letter talking about the importance of social responsibility.
Okay. This is from a guy who says democracy's messy, markets like totalitarianism.
Right. So this is the equivalent of making gas chambers, you know, and then preaching to people about social responsibility.
Right.
I mean, IG Farben, for all its evil, it never preached to people about social responsibility that I know of.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So this is like IG Farben on steroids, preaching about being good.
Yeah.
Right.
Last story in FedWatch, is IMF and SDR allocation to boost Pakistan's reserve by $2.8 billion. Now, I talk about people not understanding money. This would appear that...
I told you, $650 billion to buy the world.
Why are you, Pakistan, taking... you don't need their money. You have your own money. Anyway, so they're saying external liquidity strains ease in Pakistan. In the last 6 months, official reserves, meaning in Pakistan, have increased. Now, Pakistan, to be clear, has about $16 billion in reserves. The country has benefited from the disbursement of IMF resources under its $6 billion extended fund facility with the completion of the combined second fuel injection through fifth reviews last March. So they're getting more and more money from the IMF. Fitch forecasts official foreign exchange reserves to reach $17.4 billion, 3.2 months of current external payments by the end of the fiscal year, June 2021, from $13.3 billion in fiscal year 2020. So we're not talking, A, we're not talking about a lot of money in Pakistan, but B, my question is, your reserves are, you know, just like the Fed, that's all they are is IOUs.
Right.
So if you could issue your own IOUs as money, why are you going and borrowing what in essence is a foreign currency?
Right. Which makes you deeply dependent.
What are you doing? Right.
Okay, so, well, because I believe all the IMF money comes with huge kickbacks. But let me just read you. This is an email I got from Europe today. From somebody who has very close ties and is very involved with Pakistan. Spoke with my, this is a school, I won't mention the name of the town, via Skype this morning, and the pressure in favor of vaccination is growing. They are threatened not to be able to use public bus transport systems anymore, and their bank accounts may be blocked. They are doing the best to keep the teachers from succumbing to all these pressures. And wow. If you think that's not connected to the SDRs, then I have a bridge I want to sell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the same with Uganda, remember?
Yes.
You know, our associate suddenly, you know, lots of pressure to vaccinate so you can go to Uganda. And then sure enough, Uganda shuts down as soon as they get the promise of the IMF loan.
Right. Before we go to CBDC... Do you want to mention Cash Friday?
Yes. So we had a magical moment last week in Switzerland. So we had all the people from Children's Health Defense. Mary Holland, who's just an exceptional person and attorney, was there. I don't know if you've ever met her in person, but that's something I can't wait to see happen. And then Dr. Meryl Nass, who's one of the great medical leaders of, you know, trying to figure out what in the world is going on in vaccination and help people stay safe. Anyway, so we're there, and I'm talking about the passports, and you know, we'll talk about it in a second, but we have a great story by Corey Lynn up on the website this week. She's doing a series with us about, you know, sort of what the passports are and who involved and who's pushing it and who's doing it, because this is, you know, vaccine passports are one of the important vehicles along with the ID 2020 system that they're gonna use to get complete control so they can turn off all our bank account. You know, if you don't behave, you know, then you can't go, more than 5 miles from your house, or you can't order pizza or, you know, whatever it is. But we're talking about very complete control, like the social credit system in China. Anyway, so Mary was saying, okay, well, how can we stop it? So we were brainstorming, and I said, you know, what we need to do is take the cash use up. You know, don't let them go to all digital systems. We need to start really increasing the use of cash. And Mary said, well, what about Cash Friday? And I thought, you know, everybody in the South eats fish on Friday and we all dress down on Friday. You know, we all know about Friday. You know, I said, what a great idea. What a fabulous idea. Oh. And so we said, okay, we're going to do this Cash Friday. So we just, one of the members of the Celeri team has agreed to run the Cash Friday campaign. And I should show you. So we were coming back from Locarno and we stopped for dinner and here it is. What we're going to do is we're going to post our receipts on social media. So I've got to take a picture of this. But here's my receipt. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a dinner on Friday. My number one. I'm going to number them. That's my number one receipt. And so everybody, you know, let's stop an all digital system. Let's slow it down. Let's stop it. Everybody on Friday just use cash. And if for some reason you have to use a digital mechanism on Friday, just record, let's say it's $100, then, you know, make up for it another day of the week. But just start with Friday. See if you can use all cash just on Friday. And you know something? I think if one day a week we all just start using cash, you know, you pointed out 2 weeks ago how much the cash volume has gone up. This will go through the roof. Right. And I think one of the reasons they're trumpeting the inflation is they're trying to get people out of cash and into digital.
Could be.
I can't tell you how many subscribers have said to me, oh, well, because of inflation, I don't want to hold cash, so I'm running down my cash doors.
Yeah.
And I say, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
Right. Especially, you know, physical cash.
Right.
But cash, you know, it's one of those words like love. It's just, you know, you got to be precise. You mean Federal Reserve notes, used bills.
Right.
Right. That's what you want to keep. That always, you know, cash is king.
Right.
You know, a lot of people refer to cash.
You know, if you can talk to your local stores into doing it, you can just start using gold and silver. You can use coins.
Yeah, but okay.
cash
is legal tender.
Yes.
You know?
Well, so is 90% silver. 90% silver is legal tender.
It's legal tender at face.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Right. That's the problem.
Not if the businesses will trade at market, though.
But that's not legal tender, though. That's them. That's an agreement between you and the debtor or the creditor.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
Let's just go on to CBDC. Keep it going here. This next story is interesting for a few reasons. Global banks. You see that?
Yeah.
Okay. This is about the SWIFT system, and there's nothing. I don't really understand. I'm not really tracking this story, but there's a few interesting tidbits in here. Banks endorse new SWIFT platform set for launch in November 2022. So, you know, almost a year and a half. But look at the names of the banks who have gotten behind this. This is what gets me. Bank of China.
Right.
Bank of New York Mellon. Paribas. Citi. Deutsche Bank. And Standard Chartered. So you've got three U.S. banks. Chinese bank, French bank, and German bank. And big banks. I mean, New York Mellon and Standard Chartered, those are banks that often they work with the Fed.
Right.
And what they're doing is when the Fed wants to buy assets, somebody's got to manage the assets, manage the mortgage-backed securities,
custodians.
The custodians,
Custodians. Mellon's the big custodian.
Mellon's the big, is the only remaining huge custodian. And you know what? Standard Chartered is not U.S.
Right.
I misspoke. It's English.
It's Brit. It's the Brits.
It's British.
Right.
So it's one Chinese, one French, one German, one U.K., and two U.S. banks.
Right. It's basically G7 minus Italy.
Yeah.
Right.
Minus a couple. All right. The platform evolution builds on extensive work by SWIFT community in the past 5 years to transform cross-border payments. Now, remember, cross-border payments is one of those things we keep seeing that phrase again and again in connection with CBDC.
Right.
Like, we got to make sure cross-border payments works. So here's where it gets kind of interesting. Because they say what the situation is now, but they don't tell you what they're going to. Most cross-border payments today reach end beneficiaries within minutes with full transparency and confirmation when the payment reaches its final destination. This happens across a network of more than 11,000 institutions and 4 billion accounts across 200 countries. And then so you go, okay, well, what are we going to go? You're going to close these completely transactions within seconds? And they never answer the question. The new capabilities and enhanced platform SWIFT is building will take these advancements to the next level. And then they quote all these people, and it's like, oh, this is going to be awesome. That's what the quotes are. Oh, man, this is the next best thing. But they never tell you, like, what are you, okay, so.
What are you doing?
What's the improvement?
Right.
I'm not tracking this. So right. It's like, well, it's a big deal, and you guys are saying it's you're taking it to the next level. It's just more marketing.
So here's the criticism on the current payment system is that it's not fast enough. And the pressure supposedly to do crypto on a blockchain is you can get it faster. Now, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
But there is no doubt that certainly the wire transfer system is clunky. Now,
yes.
It's gotten a lot better in the last 4 years. You know, 10 years ago, if I wanted to send money from Europe to the United States or vice versa, it was 1 to 6 days. And, you know, it could be 6 days, so you couldn't plan on it being one day. Now it's much more reliable. So I'm sure at a minimum, what they're trying to do is get much more reliable. But I'm assuming they're trying to either handle the CBDCs or compete with them.
Yeah. So just so your subscribers know, when Bank A, I want to transfer money from Bank A to Catherine's Bank B because I'm going to pay her or something. That's it. There's two parallel transfers.
Right.
It's bank money moving around
right.
from my account to your account. But it's really reserves or what's
right.
what's behind the scene moving from my bank to your bank.
Right.
And so when you add cross-border, two different currencies, you're adding, you're squaring the level of complexity.
Right.
It goes right because now you've got to settle in bank currency and you've got to settle in reserves and that would take a long time. But how it improves with SWIFT, they never answer that.
Right. It's like all these articles we keep talking about, which is they're selling concepts. Sometimes the concepts make sense, sometimes they don't.
Right.
Well, it's details. So you're always left with this feeling. You know, I get back to this word incoherence. You're always left with this feeling of, you know, it's sort of chipper incoherence.
Like, I'm just dumb. It's, you know, being stupid is fun, and I'm just stupid, and it'll all work out.
Okay.
Next story at CBDC, speaking of crypto, here we go. Why everything they said about solar was wrong.
This one is funny.
This is great. This guy Schellenberger. He says, you know, 3 years ago, I wrote a long article for Forbes saying that solar panels aren't clean. They're really dirty because they produce 300 times more toxic waste than high-level nuclear waste. And he says, the media jumped all over me. And he said, you know, I was vilified. He says, but when reporters eventually looked into the issue, they came to the conclusion, same conclusion I had. The New York Times published a long article about it. And he goes on and he says, now the Harvard Business Review is jumped on the train. This guy Schellenberger's right because it's dirty. And it creates all this trash. And then they go on, they say, you know, it's not just solar that's not clean. It's everything. It's wind turbine blades
right.
are going to end up in landfills. And, you know, electric, this is one of my favorites. According to prevailing estimates, only 5% of electric vehicle batteries are currently recycled. So that you know those are dirty, right?
Right.
The cadmium and the batteries and all this stuff. So in other words, all this green technology, talk about marketing.
So the push for the climate change scam and carbon credits is on with a vengeance. And this is all part of getting everybody an electrical grid and getting control
right.
of all the real estate. And it's going to be, I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's going to be another one of these games of chicken between the people interested in the truth and the people pushing this stuff. You know, and this one's good for 5 years. This is 5 years of entertainment.
Yeah, and it's not only, it's good for another reason too with the powers that be in that, you know, one day they can be saying, oh, it's green energy, but the next day they can just shut it off saying, you know what, crypto burns too much energy, you know, the solar panels, they're dirty, and the wind turbine blades,
right?
You know, they're in landfills and we got to cut it off.
Right.
So they can stop and start and stop and start and stop and start, and they know ahead of time how to bet these things.
One of the funniest days I've ever had in my life was sitting in Midland, Texas with a bunch of really great oil and gas guys.
That's Dow Chemical country.
Who were explaining, these were independent producers.
Okay.
And, you know, the oil and gas independent producers, in my opinion, are some of the best people in the world. They are. I love them. And, but, you know, but they basically unpacked the economics of oil versus gas versus wind versus so, you know, because they know, you know, they're on the ground. And, you know, Texas has used a fair amount of solar and wind. You know, they they got plenty of solar and wind that they've used down there. And what you realize is, oh, you know, it's all about getting everybody an electrical grid where you can control them. It's all, you know, I hate to say it's all about the CBDCs.
Yeah.
You know, crypto is the biggest energy user of them all.
Yeah. In fact, that's it.
More energy than Switzerland or
Germany.
That's
the next story.
Right.
Yeah. Here we go. The crypto climate accord. You knew it was coming. The crypto climate accord walks a fine line between self-interest and the greater good. And this is just, you know, with concerns surrounding blockchain's environmental impact. So that's kind of the headline. But, you know, so what's going on here? And they get into it in this paragraph here. Blockchains relying on proof-of-work consensus mechanism require high-performance computers, which consume immense amounts of power, leading to inefficiency, non-renewable resource consumption, and significant electronic waste. So in other words, crypto people, they know they're vulnerable.
Right.
So what are they doing? The planet has been filled with carbon emissions and billionaires and industry evangelists suddenly regaining a conscience to restore the planet's ecosystem and act for the greater good. Is that what's going on? Or are they simply, you know, is this simply a gimmick designed to suppress criticism and provide good PR? Well, you be the judge, but, you know, pretty clearly crypto's got, they're vulnerable and they know they're vulnerable.
Right. Right. They're very vulnerable.
So they're trying to get out in front with, oh, well, we've got a climate accord just like you.
Right.
If your climate accord is good and so is ours, stick with crypto. You don't need that central bank digital currency because you don't need tons of energy. You need a 5-volt battery for CBDC. That's it.
Right.
Right. You know, there's no mining going
on. Right, except for the control. They need everybody on the electrical grid if they're going to control.
Right.
For the CBDC to control, they need the electrical grid. And that is hugely wasteful.
Yeah, but it's not like computers, you're sitting in a warehouse just burning electricity.
Well, one of my
sake of making a nickel.
One of my theories is if you look at all the sort of breakthrough energy technologies, if you bring them out before you have a complete smart grid, then the profit from it will go much more to the consumer. If you have an electrical grid centrally controlled, when you bring out the breakthrough energy, you can get 100% of the value creation, right?
Yeah.
So, right. So they may bring the price of energy way down with new energy technology, but they want to make sure that they control, you know, where the equity value goes.
Well, as you saw, though, from all that green energy stuff, it's not...
Oh, no, that stuff is not energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, keep it going on CBDC. Next story from Solari. The global landscape on vaccine ID passport and where it's headed. This is by Corey Lynn of Corey's Digs. And this is great. You know, and so she says, many of us saw this coming, have been warning of this for quite some time. One big tip-off was ID 2020, which was launched in 2016.
Right.
By none other than Bill Gates' Gavi, Microsoft, the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, and IDEO.org.
Right.
How prophetic of them to nail down the year 2020 as a need for a digital ID.
So amazing. Corey has agreed. So she's doing this in partnership with us. She's agreed to do 5 to 10. I said, Corey, look, we've got to unpack exactly what's happening with the passports and who's doing what. So on this one, she said, I want to go in and do all the states and many countries and just see what the state of play is legislatively on implementing passports. And what she's finding, of course, is you have all these states who say they're stopping it. But if you read the legislation, it's full of Swiss cheese. You know, it's like Swiss
cheese.
And there is no doubt that this digital control infrastructure is being moved into place. She's going to follow this up, John, with 5 to 10 more of, you know, sort of who the players are, who's making money, how it all works, because we've got to have a blueprint of what's up if we're going to stop this.
Right. Right. So the question she asks is just how far have they gotten with these digital vaccine ID passports?
They're moving
so
fast.
Far.
They
and
are
she
moving
said, here's,
fast.
Here's the roadmap. And so she actually has a map here. You know, red is, you know, there's anti-passport legislation there. And the red ones are Florida, Alabama, Arkansas, fully red, and Montana. And then partially red would include, you know, Indiana,
right,
and quite a few others. And she goes through the whole thing.
You know, I know people who are moving to jurisdictions. You know, they're changing where they live because they don't want to live in a
right
in a heavily passported
I got out of Illinois.
Right.
You know, and I didn't go to Gary, Indiana. I went to the Amish side of Indiana, right, anyway.
So, this is important. Anything
it's huge.
Each one of us can do to stop the passports is great. And again, one of the things you can do is Cash Friday and moving your bank. If you're banking with a big New York Fed member bank, get to a local bank or credit union, because we've got to get, in the United States, you're going to have to get 5,000 bank presidents fighting against. If UBI and CBDC will put the banks out of business, they will have complete control. And those 5,000 bank presidents still stop the Fed from doing stupid things.
Exactly.
Right.
I would say if you can get your money out of a commercial bank, even if it's a small commercial bank, it's the wrong place to be, in my opinion, and get it into a credit union.
I don't know. I'm in a community bank and I love them. So.
You know, it's funny. I asked somebody who works in the banking industry, I said, do community banks, when they lend money, do they create it out of thin air or do they get it out of a vault? And she didn't know. She's vice president in a credit union.
Right.
So I don't know the answer to that. Anyway, last story in CBDC, we talked about, this is Matt Hancock. He resigns. And that's the headline. You know, he was grabbing his secretary and, you know, having an affair and all this stuff. But the real story here is he's replaced by former Deutsche Bank director, takes over that health minister position in England.
Well, the real story is that the thing that got him resigned was the Jackie DeVos breaking the fact that the early deaths, just like Cuomo engineered the early deaths in New York,
right,
Hancock had engineered the early deaths with euthanasia of elderly. And it's a, you know, we talked about the Jackie getting on the Richie DeVos story, the Richie Allen podcast, I think it was last week, with four NHS whistleblowers, people who had their parents killed. And they would literally, like on Thursday, they'd be told, you need to come in on Saturday night because your father's going to die at midnight.
Yeah.
Right. And then they would come in and their father would be injected in something that would then kill him. And you know, DeVos documented hundreds of these cases. It's extraordinary. Anyway, so it appears to me that that's really got what Hancock fired. You know, they used the sordid story as the excuse. But the thing that's amazing, if you look at the guy who's replaced him, he's been in politics and governance for a while, but he comes out of Deutsche Bank and he's clearly, you know, he worked for the Exchequer. You know, so the central bankers, you know, why bother with science? Science doesn't matter anyway. None of the science, you know, is right anyway. So why not just put a Deutsche banker in the health ministry slot, because they won't be, you know, they won't be bothered with the details of the science. They don't need to know the science, right?
Well, I got to point out too, you know, last year you kept seeing reports like Bank of America is forecasting this about the pandemic, or Goldman Sachs is saying this is where things are. It's like, well,
how do they know?
What the hell? You have a lab in your bank, in the back of your bank? Why are you issuing reports on what's going to happen with this pandemic and how things are going to spread? Well, here you go.
Right.
You know, it laid the groundwork. It sort of softened the public up for, well, I guess bankers know about everything. They're omnipotent.
Well, but I think the other thing is they don't have the time to hassle with the, you know, they just need people running these agencies that will do whatever the bankers need. If the bankers need to up deflation, they'll shut down more businesses. And they really don't need to be bothered with science.
Right. Right. Exactly. They're just going to do what's best for policy.
It's what Andrew Sorkin said, that, you know, meeting in small business and shopping in small business stores puts you at risk of getting COVID, but shopping at Costco, you know, there's no risk of getting COVID, and that's what the science teaches us.
Yeah, right.
So Larry Fink can fax the science down to all the government agencies.
Yeah.
We don't
need science. Yeah, right. Right. All right. So let's move on to space military global turf wars.
Okay.
And see here, U.S. Senate finally admits that neuro weapons exist, passes bill to help diplomats. So the background here is the establishment for a long time, the conventional wisdom was that those claiming victimization by electronic weaponry, they're crazy and delusional.
Right.
Well, and lo and behold, what happens? The Senate passes a bill and says the bill's called Helping American Victims Afflicted by Neurological Attack Act of 2021, or the Havana Act of 2021, authorizes payment to qualified employees for brain injuries inflicted by neuro weaponry.
Right.
So I guess those people aren't crazy after all. What do you know?
If you go, you know, we have this a commentary, it's Larry, called it's Mind Control Tactics Used on Young People and Children. And I originally put it together as a collection of links for grandparents who couldn't understand what was happening to their kids online. You know, they were basically being programmed. And at the bottom, there are two recent lectures on neuroweaponry. And you get a sense for how far this technology has gone. This is profound, John, because, you know, it was quite a while ago that there was a problem in Moscow with these weapons being used on diplomats, and then in Cuba. But there has been an absolutely huge reluctance to admit publicly that this stuff is really happening and going on.
Right.
And part of it is the Department of Justice and the Department of Defense in 1994 entered into a memorandum of understanding that authorized the Department of Justice to take neuroweaponry in essence and non-lethal weapons and prototype it for domestic use. And a process started in 95 or 96 whereby U.S. defense contractors were using this on people. And it's been explosive. And
wow.
Interestingly enough, I'll tell you, I did a lot of research because these were being used on me and my team. And, you know, and at first when it started, people were telling me that it was happening. I couldn't believe that it would happen to someone like me. You know, you think, you know, I'm successful, I'm in Husu in America, this is not supposed to happen to me. Anyway, I did a lot of research, and one of the things I discovered was these weapons were being used by the real estate industry to make people sick and literally die. So, for example, if I have a Section 8 housing recipient in my apartment, I'm getting $800. If I can turn them, if I can cause them to become disabled, I can move them into another kind of building where I get $2,000 a month instead of $800 a month. Or
wow.
Have a rent control department. I want to get them out and get rid of them. I can force them out or kill them. And
right. And
the number of applications from these weapons was skyrocketing, but you couldn't get people to even fathom that they existed. And so for the U.S. Senate to do this is really, you know, for me, this is really good news because we can begin to deal with them and help protect people from them.
Yeah, and it's hard to deny they don't exist when the Senate is a bill predicated on paying people for this very injury.
Right. State Department, you know. Diplomats.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, is that memorandum of understanding in 1994 between the DOJ and the Department of Defense? How do you know about that?
I read it when I started to research this. It was 97 or 98. I found it and I read it. It's public. I'm sure
wow.
If we do a search, we can find it.
Wow. Okay, yeah, for yeah. another time. Moving on to, let's go, this is an interesting story. Germany's Merkel and France Macron to propose revival of collective EU-Russia relations in broad meeting with Putin, according to a media report. And that's really it, sort of the headline is the story. So
I'm still looking at Matt Hancock.
Oh, sorry about that. Let me try that again. The next story.
Yeah, this one is important.
This is
now that happened there. after the Biden Putin summit. So,
right, this is June 23rd. So, in other words, Merkel and Macron are, despite all the U.S. anti-Russia talk, you know, at least Merkel knows where the bread is buttered and where the heat is coming from, and they're saying, you know, we're going to cool things. We're going to start meeting with Putin again.
Well, I'm wondering if whatever happened with the U.S. Because, you know, suddenly Russia is now vaccinating with vigor. And I wonder if that wasn't as a result of the U.S. agreeing to let the Nord Stream 2 go through. So
could be, yeah, right. You know,
the deals are flying behind the scenes between the U.S. and Russia.
They are, right.
You know, and part of this may be Netanyahu dropping out, because I don't know if I sent you last night Jimmy Dore's thing about the U.S. taking down all the Iranian websites.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, apparently, Dore says, I haven't gone to check, that if you go into Press TV in Iran, you get a sign that says, you know, it's got the Department of Justice and say the U.S. has removed it. And I don't know whether they have the power to take down Press TV's domain, but it may just be some kind of block.
Huh.
Right. So apparently now sovereign governments are not allowed to have their own media. The U.S. can tell them.
Well, yeah, that's really an access by U.S. citizens issue.
Could be.
You know, yeah. Right. I mean, that's the DOJ. That's not against Iran. That's against us.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, they're going to spin it and market it as like, oh, we're punishing those terrorists.
Right.
No, you're punishing us.
Right.
You're saying we're not allowing you to decide
what
to read, make your own decision.
We reserve the right to invent reality day to day to day.
Right. Right.
Without regard to science.
Yeah. Without regard to science. So the last thing here, this is the video from Miami Beach condo collapse. Now, they've got the video here. I'm not going to play it here. I'm actually going to run a separate video.
Okay.
And just tell me, we can do this twice and see it, because but there's audio with this. But I'm more interested here when I'm going to play this video.
The video is very interesting.
The video. So I've gotten the best copy of the video I can. And if there's audio in there, just kind of ignore it, okay? And we can just get it out later. Okay, so could you hear the audio during that?
No, I heard a beep.
Okay, so there was no audio during that. Okay, but watch. Okay, so I'll play this video again, and we can kind of talk through it since there's no audio for us to compete with. But let's just look at the speed of this.
Remarkable.
This collapse.
You know, we have we have a team member who knows a fair amount about sinkholes.
Yeah.
And I asked him whether a sinkhole could do it, and he said he wasn't sure, but he thought it could.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it could.
Right.
If it plunged all at once. But watch the speed of this. I mean, that's... Then the second one goes.
So, you know, just looking at this, I'm constantly saying... you've heard me say this, never work in a building where there's a lot of data about mortgage and financial fraud, because they tend to blow up.
Yeah.
So the World Trade Center or the HUD building or the Murrah building out in Oklahoma City.
Right.
So buildings that have the wrong kind of data tend to blow up. Now, I can't tell whether that was weaponry or a sinkhole. And in Florida, it could have been either.
Yeah,
right. And you just don't know.
Right.
So there are lots of rumors flying around about this, and I don't think we know what the truth is here, but...
No, we do not. We do, but the truth is that a lot of people are dead.
Right. And whether it's sinkholes or other environmental problems or weaponry, you know, there is no doubt in my mind that these kinds of things are going to happen more and more.
That is a very, very disturbing video to watch.
Right.
When you think about it, they're sleeping. You know,
right.
People in their beds. They're supposed to be safe.
Right.
And they're dead. You know?
Right. Well, they're dead because somebody's not doing their job.
Right. Somewhere.
You know, whether it's the Beck brothers are on the move or government is too busy lining their own pockets and not taking care of business.
Yep.
But we're going to see that. You know, it's so remarkable, John, because I travel between countries where there's extraordinary attention and care for infrastructure. So if you're in Switzerland or you're in the Netherlands, it's remarkable. You know, it's remarkable what the Dutch have achieved in terms of quality of infrastructure over generations. I mean, half of this country was built out of the sea, was reclaimed from the sea. And it's just remarkable. And then you're in a country, you know, I've traveled a lot of places in the U.S. where they haven't taken care of the infrastructure. And it's absolutely frightening.
It is. They showed internal pictures of the Florida condo. And you see a lot of exposed rebar and a lot of rust and a lot of water around concrete. But the thing that gets me is I'm not in a position to tell you whether that's a structurally unsound structure or not. But what I can guess is that given the tens of thousands of condos in Miami, that's not the only one that looks like that.
Right. Well, you know, when government thinks that science isn't relevant, that's what happens. Buildings fall down.
Boy. Okay. All right. So we have one more chart to cover.
Okay.
An inflation chart. There you go.
Right. So compared to what we've been showing is, you know, things have backed down. So lumber was up in the 70%.
Right.
At one point, now it's down to 11%. So even though we still have, you know, a fair amount, you know, oil and gas have shot up and ethanol is quite a story. But, you know, inflation is with us, number one, but it's a little bit lighter than it was the last time we looked. And I just think the story this decade is going to be we're facing a juggernaut of inflation. And if you want to understand it, you know, what I would say, I'm going to hold this up again is, you know, if you haven't read Going Direct, you need to read it.
Yeah. So look at the ones over 40%. They're all, except for hogs, lean hogs, they're all energy. It's all oil, gas, ethanol, you know, crude oil anyway. And then the ones over 20% are copper, coffee, canola.
Right. Food.
So there you go. Right. Food. So food and energy and hogs, you know.
Right.
And now 2 weeks ago when we looked at this chart, there was the only negative one, as I recall, was the VIX.
Right.
Now you've got a few more negative, but they're not that negative.
Right.
I mean, you know, soybeans is the biggest, far and away, the reddest at minus 18.7%.
Right.
You know, but what a chart. Anyway, so that's where we are. I think you're right. Inflation's here. Yeah.
Well, Farmageddon is being used to engineer deflation in the face of massive printing. And that's why...
Very good point.
Right. Well, first of all, you know, when we did globalization, we sucked all the money out of the U.S., out of the government. You know, we offset that monetary inflation with the deflation of labor globally.
Right.
And we've gotten huge deflation from new technology. And so those things... But now the question is, if we're going to massively print another round again, where's the deflation coming from? And right now it's coming from Farmageddon. And if they dare try lockdowns for climate change, you know, basically Fauci's claim to fame is his ability to engineer deflation for the central bankers.
It would explain his longevity.
Well, I dare say if he's fired, he's going to be replaced by somebody from J.P. Morgan.
Yeah, right.
Somebody said when they saw the appointment to replace Hancock in the U.K., they said, oh, is Fauci going to be replaced by Jamie Dimon?
Yeah.
Don't be surprised.
Yeah, don't be surprised.
Don't be surprised. Okay, John, what should we look for next week? We got money in markets next week.
Yeah.
Anything on your radar for the coming week?
No, I'm out of my home. I'm down south visiting family and friends in North Carolina.
Oh, right. Now we know you're in a CIA safe house in the basement.
Right, in CIA safe house. I'm writing a video now that I realized, you know, I've been doing all this Fed stuff. And anyway, so I like to take a step back and ask questions like, why are you worried about this? If criminals are running the system, why bother?
Is
what I'm kind of wrestling with. And I got an answer to that.
So I don't know if you saw the one of the ECB guys came out and said China's moving fast on the CBDC, and if we don't move fast too, we could find the euro's market share. You know, the Chinese cutting into the euro's market share. So I don't know if you saw that.
No, but China is going to be a big part of the what goes on the other side once we get through all this. Right.
Well, there's big still part the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Not well, to mention right. whatever's flying around in the sky that we don't understand.
Yeah. Boy. Okay. You know, it's good to try to winnow through, you know, what's fiction and reality. It's the amount of propaganda and just outright lying is, it's astonishing.
Well, that's why I'm hoping what we can do with Money and Markets is really help people see what's going on. And I would just, before we close, I would just point out, again, we've got this new parental consent form. I think important actions for each of us to take. If you have kids in school, then what you need to know, the push is going to be on if they get the full authorization, which they're going to try and do before September. The push is going to be on to get kids in schools vaccinated and use the schools to either require vaccination or literally be a vaccination site.
Yeah.
And that includes trying to lower the consent age so that children can basically get vaccinated without the parent's consent. So check out the parental consent form. Check out the employer and school forms. We have been told that literally kids have used it to back up the school college requirements for vaccinations and have been able to use it for employers to get backed up. So I really think that people on the ground understanding their rights and using these mechanisms who have access to the information about the deaths and the vaccine injury and the cost of it, can use these forms like an army to back this up. So, you know, if we're going to have to go to war, we're going to have to go to war institution and employer in, you know, it's going to be, and if you can't win that one, you're going to have to pull your kids out of school and start new schools or homeschool.
Right.
So whatever it is, don't wait till the end of August or the beginning of September to deal with this. You've got to figure out, if you have kids, you've got to figure out what you're going to do now, and you've got to take action now. And the other thing is, if you're in a, you need to understand what your jurisdiction is doing with passports and how you're going to deal with that. So check out those at the homepage of Solari.com. And whatever you do on Friday, use cash.
Spend cash, yeah. That's it. Right on.
Okay, John, have a great week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, have a great weekend, and I'll see you in a week.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.